If you want to turn to Judges chapter 9, we'll go ahead and get started. Really, Judges 6 through 9 is one big story about Gideon. Gideon dies off in the end of chapter 8, but Abimelech is kind of what happens to his son. So we started well with Gideon in chapter 6. Ended pretty good halfway through 7, and then it just kind of went downhill, where he became very prideful. And at the end of his life, how did Gideon act? If you remember kind of from last week. Yes, good. Had a lot of pride. And remember what happened with the victory, that it was Gideon and his 300, and then what do the people say to Gideon? Remember their request of him? Will you please rule over us? We want you to be our king. And how did Gideon respond to that? Yeah. So I'm not going to be your king because the Lord is your king. And remember, the people gave Gideon the credit for delivering them, for giving them the victory, something that God was very powerfully showing them. It's not Gideon, it's me cutting down that army from, 32,000? 32,000 to 300, something like that. And so showing them, obviously, this is God doing the work, but they again contribute, give Gideon the credit, and will you rule over us? So he says the right thing, no, because God is your king. But Joshua mentioned one thing. He built an ephod for himself. How else did he act like a king over them? Do you remember kind of the end of chapter 8? Good. So he had many wives, 70 children, plus one, Abimelech. Now, you remember what Abimelech means? My father, the king. So naming your child, my father, the king, kind of implies, right? I'm not going to be your king, but you can call me that if you want to. Remember he asked the people, will you please give me your gold and all those things? So he very much acts like a king. And then he dies, and then we're introduced to Abimelech, who was born by his concubine. So that kind of sets up what we're going to be looking at in chapter 9. I'm going to kind of divide chapter 9 into two parts. First, we'll look at the first 21 verses, and then we'll look 22 through the end. So Abimelech goes to Shechem, and he talks to his mother's family and in Shechem, and what does he want? What's his request? Yeah, so Gideon says the right thing, but acts the wrong way. And what we're going to see in Abimelech is he's a lot like Gideon. In fact, he doesn't even say, no, the Lord is your king. He just goes a step beyond that and says, I need to be the king. So he kind of campaigns for himself. And what's in his campaign to try to become king? What arguments does he make to try to become king here? To the people of Shechem, that's where he's from.
It's better for one than 70.
Okay, so what would you rather have? 70 guys ruling over you? You think about how can 70 guys agree on anything? Wouldn't it be better if just one person were to rule over you? And what's another argument he uses? Why he is the rightful king?
Because I want you.
Okay, we are related, right? We're blood, and so I am your bone and flesh. And so he takes on this, and how does his campaign go in verse 3? Everyone's on board, right? In Shechem, that makes a lot of sense to us. And kind of the major thing that they say is, well, I mean, he's one of us. I mean, how cool is that? That one of us gets to be the king over Israel. Now, I don't see anywhere, and I don't see anywhere that it's implied that the 70 other sons of Gideon were trying to become king. It seems like only Abimelech is trying to become king here. And in the song, Othniel, Ehud, Shamgar, Deborah, Abimelech is named as a judge. I would say you'd be hard-pressed to make that a point in Scripture that God appointed Abimelech to be judge over the people. Abimelech chose himself to be judge over the people, to rule over the people. So if I could have just a little critique to that song, I would cut out Abimelech, because he's really not a judge that is chosen by the Lord. He kind of says, I'm going to do this on my own. So Abimelech gets money, and where does they get the money from? Okay, so yeah, from the temple. And remember, one of the last things that's said about Gideon when he died, verse 33 of chapter 8, as soon as Gideon died, the people of Israel turned again and whored after the Baals and made Baal Berith their god. So in the beginning of Gideon's life, he did a lot to get rid of idolatry, and as soon as he dies, idolatry is in full force, full swing again. So he uses these 70 pieces of silver and hires out worthless and reckless fellows, my version says. Your version may say a little bit different. And basically, if you pay them enough, they'll do whatever you tell them to do. So they are easily swayed by money, and they don't really have any morals to them. So what's the first thing that Abimelech does as the self-proclaimed king? Gets rid of the competition. Yeah, gets rid of the 70 brothers. And you see this a lot, right? First Kings, Second Kings, when a king of Israel takes over, he'll kill the king and the rest of his family. So there's no doubt that he is the king. So that's what Abimelech does here. He does a pretty good job. Who gets away? Jotham, who is the youngest, right? Does that remind you of anything that happens later in the kingdom of Judah, where someone kills all the sons except is it Josiah or Joash? Joash. And who's the murderer? Remember? Athaliah. Joash's grandmother, if I'm not mistaken. So she gets rid of everyone. Joash flees to the temple. Never going to look for him there, right? Never going to go to the temple. And then about 8 years later, I believe, Jehoiada says, here's Joash, he's the king, and she cries treason, and that's the end of her. But very similar story here. Jotham is made, is not killed. And then verse 6, Abimelech is made the king. With the sons of Gideon dead, the people of Shechem, verse 6, the leaders of Shechem came together and all Beth Millo. Beth means house, so the house of Millo. And you kind of see that house a lot. Bethel, house of God, right? El God. So we have Beth Millo, and that's important. This comes up later in the story. So Shechem and Beth Millo seem to be allies and are in this together. So they're both great with Abimelech being their king. So they hold the ceremony by the oak of the pillar, which was in Shechem. So everything is terrible, right? You just see the decline of the people, and you see the decline of the ruler over them, and how the people desire an Abimelech to rule over them, basically because it makes them look good. He's one of ours. One of the things I want you to think about as we go through this chapter is asking the question, why do we kind of have a continuation of the story of Gideon? Why are we told about what happens after he dies? And I think one of the answers to that is to look at Gideon as a father and then look at his children. And I think there's a strong connection between those two. But I think that's a good, maybe helpful to think in that way as we go through this study. Anything you'd like to add through verse 14? Through verse 6. Good. Absolutely. Yeah.
Also, it kind of echoes Solomon later, you know? Has all these wives and all these children. Kind of repeats.
Good point. A lot like Solomon multiplying wives for himself. And one of the things in Deuteronomy that it tells a king not to do is multiply wives for yourself. So we usually say Saul is the first king, and I think probably rightly so. He's the first king over all of Israel. I don't know how much kingship that Abimelech has here, how much he is ruling over. I wouldn't say all of Israel, but maybe like a portion. What's that?
Like a mayor.
A mayor, okay. Yeah, we'll give him that, the mayor Abimelech. There you go. Okay, so look at verse 7. Kind of the setup to Jotham's speech. And where is Jotham? Where does he make his speech?
Up on the mountain.
Okay, which mountain? Gerizim. So, and what's the other mountain opposite of Gerizim? You remember? Ebal. So Ebal sounds a lot like evil. That's how I remember it. So Mount Ebal is the Mount of Curses. Mount Gerizim is the Mount of Blessing, and right in the valley between those two mountains is the city of Shechem, if you kind of get that in your mind. So he's standing on Mount Gerizim, which is supposed to be the mount where you bless, right? That's what happened in the past. I don't see Jotham doing that here in these blessings. So he is kind of laying a curse on Mount Gerizim, so there's no blessing anymore based on how you're acting. It's how I take that. It maybe makes more sense for him to be on Mount Ebal, right, to pronounce this this parable. But he calls out to the people of Shechem, and he says, listen to me so that God may listen to you. And so he tells this neat little parable. So he says, the trees want a king to reign over them. So he's kind of drawing a picture here. So Shechem is represented by a bunch of trees, and they're looking around for someone to rule over them as trees. So where do they go to first? Who do they want to rule over them? The olive tree. So the olive tree, that's a good first choice. I read that an olive tree can grow to be about 50 feet tall. I don't know if that's true, but sounds good. But it's a big tree, produces a lot of olives, olive oil, right? Would come kind of the anointing oil. So will you please reign over us? And look at verse 9, the olive tree answers, shall I leave my fatness with which God and men are honored and wave over trees? I'm producing this oil that's used to anoint men. In other words, I'm too busy doing better things than just ruling over you bunch of trees. So in other words, no thanks. I'm not interested in being the king. John is telling essentially the men of Shechem, no honorable man of any good reputation would want to rule over you. Now, what are they saying then about Abimelech, right? He is not very honorable since he agreed to rule over you. You go to an olive tree, he says, no, I got better things to do. So secondly, verse 10, they say, well, what about the fig tree? Not as grand as the olive tree, maybe about half the height, I read, so maybe 25. And it's still a decent choice. It's still a tree, a tree ruling over other trees. And the olive tree answers in verse 11, shall I leave my sweetness and my good fruit to wave over the trees? And again, it just doesn't make much sense for me to quit doing the good I'm doing to rule over you guys. And then next, they go to the vine. So you just kind of see them going less and less. Well, surely a vine would want to rule over us trees, right? And the vine's answer, verse 13, shall I leave my new wine, which cheers God and men, and go wave over you? So not even a lowly vine is willing to rule over them. And finally, look at verse 15. Let's read that together. Going to the bramble, what they're reduced to. You come and reign over us. And the bramble said to the trees, if in good faith you are anointing me king over you, then come and take refuge in my shade. But if not, let fire come out of the bramble and devour the cedars of Lebanon. What do you notice in the bramble's answer that would be very similar to Abimelech, since Abimelech is representing the bramble?
You're saying about getting rid of the competition.
Okay.
Bring them down to an equal level with him, basically.
Okay, yes. What else do you see in his answer? It's pretty comical, right?
Take refuge in my shade.
Yeah. You trees take refuge in the shade that me, the bramble, is giving you. So pretty prideful, right? Pretty boastful. Thinks a lot of himself, which again would reflect very much Abimelech in his attitude. So he's power hungry. He is not very kind to his subjects who made him king. If you don't treat me well, I'm going to destroy you. And he thinks he is really something, but in all reality, he's just bramble. He's not even a vine. He's not even a fig tree. It's certainly not an olive tree. So you just kind of see a lot of the comparison. So this is Jotham. Whatever his name is, kind of saying this, like, guys, you picked a terrible king to rule over you, and you're going to get what you deserve. So look at verse 16 through 21, and he starts off by saying, if you have done things right, that's a big if, right? Because Jotham knows they did nothing right in this. So if you have done this right, have you dealt in truth and integrity in making Abimelech king? And they'd have to say no. Have you dealt well with Jerubbaal or Gideon and his house? Let me answer that for you. Verse 17, look at what Gideon did for you. He fought for the people. He risked his life. He delivered them from the hand of Midian. Again, do you see Jotham giving too much credit to his dad here, or is this kind of a reflection of, look what he did. He did lead the people. It was God who did it. I don't know exactly how to read that, but it's a possibility that he's giving too much credit to Gideon. Look what Gideon did for you.
I think he's just comparing between the leadership of Gideon versus the leadership of
Abimelech. Okay, that's a good point. Maybe there's a good strong contrast there. Gideon as their ruler, leader, compared to Abimelech. We'll go with that.
Because he hasn't done anything.
Yes.
Except kill all his brothers.
Right, yeah, nothing good of integrity or of truth. So Jotham affirms they have not been good. Verse 8, let me answer that for you. Have you done things in truth and integrity? No, you arose against his house, killing 70 of his sons. On one stone they made Abimelech, the son of a maidservant, their king, because they're related. So if you have dealt in truth and integrity to the house of Gideon, it is time to rejoice. Good for you if you did things the right way. But verse 20, if you have done things wrong, and this is kind of his curse, which sets up, right, the rest of the story. The curse is, let fire come out from Abimelech and destroy the men of Shechem and Beth Millo. So those are the two kind of cities, villages that put him up as king. And then let fire come forth from Shechem and Beth Millo to destroy Abimelech. And as we'll continue, this is exactly what's happening. They end up basically destroying each other. So then Jotham escaped to the city of Beer, fearing probably Abimelech would kill him. So this kind of sets up the next story. But I want to look at some points of application before we jump into that next section there, starting in verse 22. Gideon's sin that we see in the latter part of chapter 8 really sets the tone, especially for Abimelech and the life that he lives. What Gideon was unwilling to do and say, I am the king, I will rule over you, Abimelech was more than happy to go forward and say, I'll be your king. And you can make a comment on this if you'd like. But our children are likely to follow in our footsteps. And not only follow in our footsteps, sometimes go beyond how we lead. I heard someone say, imagine if your child did something 10 times the amount that you did. And my answer was, oh no, I really need to watch myself, right? How much time do they see me studying the Bible or praying? Wouldn't those be good things for them to excel in? I don't know. I'll stop there. But any thoughts or comments kind of that you see with Gideon and then see even more in Abimelech? Fair point.
Jotham seems okay.
Jotham, yeah. Yeah, I think he's scared for his life. But shoo. Yeah, he does. So be careful. Be careful how what our model, our example is. This is not just to parents, right? Kids are looking at us and watching us. Let's make sure we're giving them the good example. Paul said, therefore, I exhort you to the Corinthians, be imitators of me. Wonder how many of us would say, I want you to imitate me exactly. And that should be our goal. Another point that we see that Abimelech did not do very well is check our motives if you want to be in charge. We need to be very cautious of the person who desires to run things. Says, you should choose me as your leader because I want to run things around here. Oh, that's not really who we want. Who is the best kind of leader? How would you describe a really good leader? There are many good answers to this.
Humble.
Humble, yes.
Servant. I would say often it's the one that people push forward. The leader doesn't put themselves out there.
Yep. It's the other way around. Absolutely. Think about Moses being a great leader, and God said he was the meekest man among them. So a good leader is one who's always wanting to serve, always wanting to help in whatever way he can. Don't be an Abimelech. So don't get distracted by the lesser thing. I think we learned that from the fig tree, the olive tree, even the vine. I have better things to do than rule over you. So a lot of good lessons. But if I want to finish the chapter, maybe I should press on. So yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
He doesn't think particularly highly of himself at all. And then we go find David, and he's out the youngest and the smallest of all of his brothers. So just maybe to your point there, like, God uses people who aren't necessarily the immediate power-hungry type.
Good point. Good. Always, the greatest among you shall be the servant. If you humble yourself, God will exalt you. A lot of those things certainly apply. Well, Abimelech rules for how long? How do you think those 3 years were? If Abimelech is ruling over you, you think those were 3 good years? Probably not, with a king that just desires all the glory and everything for himself. That's not who you want. So I'm amazed that it took him this long to rebel against each other. But that's exactly what you see. So verse 23, God sends an evil spirit. And this is kind of the beginning of Jotham's curse or prayer coming to pass that we saw in verse 20. And then we see verse 24, why God sent the Spirit. So Abimelech would receive his just penalty for killing his 70 brothers. So the men of Shechem would be destroyed because they helped Abimelech do that. So a lot of times we want God's judgment to be a lot quicker than 3 years, right? Why is this guy still living after he did this horrible thing? And we sometimes can doubt, well, is God in control? Is he going to do anything? Yeah, he will in his time, when it's the right time. And I think that's a good lesson here. So after 3 years, 26 through 30, Shechem appoints a new leader. Gael, or however you pronounce that, and his family cross over into Shechem. And the first thing they do is have a big drinking party. And they celebrate and have a good time, and while they're at it, they curse Abimelech for being just a bad guy. And notice what they say there in verse 28 and 29. Who is Abimelech? You know, who is this guy? Who do you think he really is? Who is Shechem? Now, are they talking about themselves? I would say maybe they are referring to the original Shechem that goes all the way back to Genesis 34. You remember that story? It involves Dinah, the daughter of Jacob, and he took advantage of Dinah, and that did not sit well with the couple of her brothers, and they just destroy the town. So who is Shechem? You know, he's not a good guy that this city seems to be named after. He's not a good, honorable man. Is Zebul not his lieutenant, Abimelech's kind of lord? So Zebul takes offense at that. Say, hey, why are you mocking me? And so then, would therefore that this people were under my authority, I would remove Abimelech. And so all the people in their drunken state say, we agree. We want a new leader to rule over us. Not this Abimelech or Zebul or anything like that. And so increase your army and come out. Although this was said to Abimelech, certainly he was not present. This is a taunt again against Abimelech, his apparent weakness in battle. And these words end up causing the destruction of Shechem and Abimelech and Beth Millo. So I'm kind of pressing on quickly. Any thoughts or comments through verse 29, kind of what they are taunting with? Anything you'd like to add? Okay, so they're doing this taunt, and who is not happy In verse 30, who takes offense to this? Zebul, yeah, the ruler of the city. And you kind of see Zebul kind of pairing with Abimelech here. So Zebul sends a secret message to Abimelech, and he informs Abimelech, this guy Gaal and his family are stirring up this city against you. They want to make him their new king instead of you. They're not really happy with you at the moment. So they're going to get a new king if you don't do something. So get your men tonight, lie in wait in the field, and when the sun comes up, rush the city and do whatever you want to them. So Zebul wants to end Gaal's insurrection and get it destroyed before it ever begins, which I would say is a pretty good plan. Just wipe them out when they're in the early stages. And this really doesn't give Gaal too much time to plan an attack or plan a defense. They're probably still drunk, right, at this point, after having that party. And so it's kind of act quickly and let's get them, take them out. So Abimelech does just that in 34 through 41. Abimelech attacks Gaal, obeys Zebul's order, and Gaal is kind of noticing something. Do you kind of get that? So he's looking at the mountains, and he says, look, people are coming down from the mountaintops. And what's Zebul's response? Yeah, you're just seeing stuff. You really are. You're not doing too well, are you? So that's just a shadow. Nothing really to be worried about. Give it a little bit more time, and then Gaal, hey, wait a second. That's no shadow. I was right the first time. Those are people, and they are about to attack. Then notice verse 38. Then Zebul said to him, where is your mouth now? You who said, who is Abimelech that we should serve him? Are not these the people whom you despised? Go out now and fight with them. See what he's saying? You talk real big and tough. When it comes to pursuing and acting on that, you don't want anything to do with it. So you need to prove yourself a man, prove yourself a real leader, and go out and attack. In other words, Zebul said, I want you to go out there and die. essentially what he says. Zebul, what do you think Zebul's relationship with the people of Shechem? And remember, Zebul is kind of the head over the city. What do you think of what he's saying there to do? I don't know if I asked that very well. Essentially, he is telling this city of Shechem, I want you to go fight. And he knows they're going to fight a losing battle. So Zebul's really not a great leader at all, kind of getting the people of Shechem to die in this battle and knowing that they're not going to, they don't have a chance to win. So Abimelech maybe also trying to get Gaal outside of the city, outside of the protection of the city of Shechem. Go out in the fields, fight like a man, where it'd be to his disadvantage being out in the field. Verse 39 to 41, Abimelech's victory over Gaal. Gaal and the leaders of Shechem go fight against Abimelech and his men. And Abimelech wins the battle, chases Gaal, wounding many of the men of Shechem. And Abimelech, after ending Gaal's plan of ruling over Shechem, goes back to Arumah, if I'm saying that correctly. Zebul drives out Gaal and his relatives from living in Shechem. So you're not welcome here anymore, and you're not going to rule over the people of the city. So then verse 42 to 45, as we try to wrap up. Abimelech destroys Shechem. The people of Shechem, the ones that are remaining, they go out to the field, and then what do you see happening? Once they're out in the field, what happens next? Good. So what I see is there's three companies?
Yes.
Thank you. So there's three companies. So Abimelech kind of goes to the city and keeps anyone from going into the city, right? Where the other two kind of attack those who would go in the field, probably the men, right, who would work outside the city and the crops and all that. So they are attacked. And then we get into the city. So they Abimelech fights against, captures, and destroys Shechem. And what do you think about Abimelech killing the people of Shechem? Who are some of those people? Yes, people that appointed him king. Yeah, it's his own family, right? Remember, that was how he got to be king. Hey, we're related. Now what do you see him doing? Killing, possibly, his own family. So, good ruler, right? Abimelech then, verse 46 to 49, he's not done. So the leaders of Shechem enter the inner chamber of the tower, and thousand men and women go in there, and Abimelech cuts down a branch from a tree and says, "All of you who are with me, do likewise." So they got these men with a bunch of branches. They set the branches on fire and kind of put them in the tower, and they kill 1,000 men and women who survived all of the other attacks. How does this remind you of Gideon? Anything in Gideon's life this similar to? It reminded me, you remember when Gideon goes to a city and says, "Man, we're on the attack, can you give us some bread? That would be really helpful." And they say, "We're not giving you any of our bread." And then he goes to the next city. "Man, could you give us some bread?" "No." "Well, okay, then we're going to beat you with the briars, and we're going to knock down your tower." So you got to see them, Gideon fighting his own battles and killing his own people. And we see that with Abimelech as well. It seems as though nothing can stop Abimelech's temper. So he destroys Shechem, but remember, there's still that one city left. So Abimelech attacks the city of Thebez and captures it. I read it was about 10 miles northeast of Shechem, so a close by city, maybe alliance cities. So the people of Thebez, they enter the tower of the city, and what's Abimelech's plan? Yeah, the first time worked really well. Let's just do that again, and we'll take care of this group as well. And what goes wrong for Abimelech in verse 53?
A woman casts a millstone down.
Yeah, I kind of entitled, he gets a massive headache. So he gets a woman throws down an upper millstone from the tower and just cracks his skull, and essentially he's still alive because he wants his armor bearer just, "I don't want to be known that a woman killed me." Can you see that pride in him? So can you kill me? And so his nice armor bearer, faithful armor bearer, does just that. Reminds you again of King Saul. Maybe there's a lot of similarities between these two men as well. Now, the interesting thing, look at 2 Samuel. Mark, go ahead and mark here, but look at 2 Samuel chapter 11 and in verse 21. Now, 2 Samuel 11 is the story about David and Bathsheba, right? And this is kind of one of David's plans to get rid of Uriah. And notice what it says in 2 Samuel 11, verse 21. "Who struck down Abimelech, the son of Jerubbaal?" Is that a good guess? Did not a woman throw an upper millstone on him from the wall so that he died at Thebez? What did Abimelech not want for him, for it to be said of him that a woman killed me? What said of him many, many years later? I know David's going to bring this up. Why in the world did you let Uriah go attack the city where this same thing happened? And a woman killed him, so he doesn't get his wish. So Israel flees to their homes in verse 55 with their leader dead. Abimelech's army returns to their homes. And so the woman, therefore, kills Abimelech and saves her city and saves many lives. Just have a guess that God was in control of all those things with that millstone hitting him. So God's justice, verse 56 and 57, is served. Let's go ahead and read those final verses. Thus God returned the evil of Abimelech, which he committed against his father in killing his 70 brothers. And God also made all the evil of the men of Shechem return on their heads, and upon them came the curse of Jotham, the son of Jerubbaal. What are some lessons before I give you mine? What are some applications or thoughts that you get from this story, the latter part of it? What jumps out at you? Yes. Yeah. If we do not do things God's way, this is what happens. And the sad thing is, you would think, man, it's hard to get any lower than this. But I think that spiral just continues to go down. And at the end, right, of Judges, everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And you just see the mess that you get yourself into if you disregard what God says. Good point. Yes, sir. Alan.
Not necessarily application, but it happened just like Jotham prophesied.
Yes. Yes.
That the bram will burn the city.
Good. So God's in control, and his word is going to be established. Josh?
It's just interesting to me that Abimelech got all these people together and they killed 70 men on one stone, and yet one stone killed Abimelech.
Very good point. Very good point. With that, you see, you reap what you sow. Let's end with that. So many cases of people reaping what they sowed in this story. The men of Shechem ambushed those into the city, verse 25, and they received their just punishment when they were ambushed by Abimelech and his men, in verse 44. The leaders of Shechem die in the very tower that funded Abimelech being king and hiring his worthless and reckless men who killed Gideon's sons. And as Josh mentioned, Abimelech killed his brothers on one stone, and that one stone killed him. And you don't always reap what you sow immediately. One of my favorite psalms is Psalm 73. And the psalmist is looking at the blessings of the wicked, and saying, "Why, God, why aren't you punishing them? It seems like they're doing better than we." And then I went to the sanctuary of God and perceived their end. Sometimes the wicked will prosper for a little while, but they don't get. God will have his just punishment. God will do judgment in his time, which is the right time. Lot more to say, but. Lord willing, we'll not tackle one, two, but three chapters next week. So we'll look at chapters 10, 11, and 12 if you want to be reading and studying ahead for that. Thank you very much.